Good morning. This fall, Colorado voters will be asked to vote on an amendment seeking to raise the minimum wage to $12 per hour. As part of our 2016 election coverage, this morning we are going to debate that amendment. I'm your host, Jim Banks, and I'm pleased to have live in studio Patty Kupfer, who is from the Colorado Families for a Fair Wage, and Tyler Sandberg from Keep Colorado Working. Patty and Tyler, welcome to KGNU.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much, Jim.
Yeah. So before we begin, why don't we have you tell us a little bit about yourselves, and then we will jump in. So, Patty, why don't you go first?
Sure. My name is Patty Kupfer. I'm the campaign manager at Colorado Families for a Fair Wage. And, you know, I really got into this work probably a little over 10 years ago. I actually started my career in teaching, but then became an advocate for immigration reform and spent several years working with immigrant families across the country trying to pass a reform measure. And more recently, I really was excited to take up this issue and this campaign because, you know, I believe that income inequality is one of the biggest issues facing our country, and it's gotten quite a bit of attention this election cycle. And, you know, I felt excited that we could build on that momentum and make real change here in Colorado.
Okay. Thank you, Tyler.
Tyler Sandberg. I'm the campaign manager for Keep Colorado Working. We're a coalition of small businesses and business associations. They're all Colorado-based that are very concerned about the impact this measure would have in rural Colorado and small businesses. This is why large corporations in Denver can likely afford a 44% increase. Small businesses and those in rural areas cannot. So I was excited to get involved because I believe it's kind of a misguided policy. I think we all support raising wages for workers, but two lines inserted into the Constitution to dictate a major economic policy for the entire state, I thought that would be devastating to a state that is on the comeback economically. Our rural areas have not come back the way Denver has, but we're on the right path, and I was very afraid. But what would happen to the economy if we inserted two lines in the Constitution? We really, they should go to the legislature. They should have much more debate. It should be much more complexly designed policy. Two lines in the Constitution are just a mallet that's not going to be a way to deal with a state as diverse as Colorado.
Okay, thank you. So why don't we begin? Patty, why don't you lay out the case for raising the minimum wage to $12?
Sure. I mean, honestly, our case couldn't be more simple. And I think for many of your listeners, it's probably something that many of us are just feeling in the economy, that the cost of living in this state has gone up dramatically in the last several years, and wages have just not kept up. And, you know, essentially what we're talking about here is hundreds of thousands of Coloradans that are working full-time and bringing home less than $300 a week. And when you look at what our rent is here in Denver, the average rent in Denver is $1,300 a month. That's not enough even to cover the most basic, you know, housing. And if you're trying to cover more than that, you know, food and your other basics, it's just impossible. So, you know, what we think is important here is, you know, you're probably going to hear a lot from the opposition about, you know, oh, we're just talking about teenagers here, or these are entry level jobs, or that sort of thing. But, you know, one thing that I was surprised to learn when I took up this issue and took on this campaign is most people don't understand, like, the average minimum wage worker is 35 years old. We're not talking about teenagers here. We're talking about 2/3 of those workers are women, and 130,000 of them across the state are trying to raise families on minimum wage. It's completely unsustainable, and there's a lot that we can do about it. The measure that we are proposing, we feel like, is both will have a huge impact on hundreds of thousands of people's lives here, and it's also something that's, we think, is modest and like a reasonable proposal. It is a phased-in proposal. So when we talk about going to $12, we really wanted to take into account the interests of business owners and others who might have to really factor this in. So we said, okay, we're at $8.31 right now. That's just an unsustainable minimum wage. How can we get to $12 in a way that's reasonable for everybody involved? And so we have it phased in so that the first year it will be $1. So starting in January of 2017, it would go to $9.30, and then it would go up 90 cents after that for the next 3 years until it reached $12. And the research shows, study after study, that these modest phased-in approaches have, you know, no impact on jobs, no impact on prices, and they lift up the folks at the bottom who are struggling the most.
Okay, Patty, thank you. Tyler, what is your case for not doing this?
My response would be that economic policy is not simple, and it's crafting a policy for a state as diverse as Colorado, or larger than New England, with many vast, diverse economic areas and regions. It can't be done in a sentence or two, and that's what this measure is proposing to do, and not a measure you can actually amend later on. This is a two-sentence argument that's going to change economic policy and greatly affect, as a lot of news stations have said, and negatively affect rural communities who simply don't have the same economy. A small family-owned restaurant in Alamosa has very different costs of doing business, and it's a very different cost of living there than, say, a big box store in Denver. And so this measure tries to apply the same wage. And it's clear that it's written by out-of-state interests, because someone from Colorado would understand a small family-owned restaurant in Alamosa can't afford to pay the same wages as a big box store in the Denver metro area. So we're very concerned about the kind of short-sightedness of this. Other states that have raised the wages, you've seen impact on prices. You've seen impact on jobs. So their response when we say this is going to impact jobs and this is going to impact prices is to say, no, it's not. But there's endless studies out there showing significant and demonstrable negative economic impact. But we're very concerned by the one-size-fits-all nature of this. So in New York and California, they're raising the wage as well. They did it through the legislature. And both of those states have off-ramps. If there is a recession, they can slow down the increases or stop them, because there could be a bleeding of jobs in rural communities that don't have the same economies that metro areas do. They don't have the same economic growth, same building, same job growth. And so in New York and California, there's an off-ramp. There's a way to resolve this if the economy goes into recession. There is not that option here. Only, I think, about one time in the last 100 years has a constitutional amendment gone in to the Colorado Constitution and then come out. So once it's in, it's there, and no one can do anything about it. In Baltimore, they're looking at raising the wages, and they said employers under 50 employees are exempt. In Portland, in Oregon, they have three different minimum wages, one for Portland, one for major counties, and one for rural communities. So around the country, they have found ways to adapt raising wages to the diversity of these large states. In Colorado, that's not the option here. It's all or nothing, and that's really going to harm rural communities. You look at other states that have raised it, and Patty says there's been no impact, but that directly contradicts a study that came out last month from the University of Washington looking at the Seattle example. They're raising wages up to $15 there, and they went from $9.64 to $11.14 in the last year. They found that low-wage workers in Seattle actually have less hours than low-wage workers in nearby counties, and they are less employed. They're about 1% less employment in Seattle versus people living just right outside the city because they don't have the same minimum wage. So we're very concerned that this is going to impact the same low-wage workers that it's supposed to help. While they want to raise low-wage for workers, in Seattle, you found low-wage workers have lost hours. So while their per hour pay has gone up, their bosses have had to reduce their hours. A lot of these small businesses only make profit margins of 3% and 4%. They don't have the ability to take on a 44% increase. And so while the wages will go up per hour, hours are going to be cut, and these same workers are going to see either no impact or could potentially lose their jobs. The only independent study done on this initiative, looking at the Colorado economy and looking at what this is, Amendment 70, looking at this measure, there's been one study, and it found 90,000 job losses by 2022 and $3.9 billion in lost wages. So we're going to see a reduction in wages. We're going to see lost jobs. A measure that is supposed to help low-wage workers will end up actually causing the layoffs and reduction of hours for many of those same low-wage workers. So it's going to harm small businesses and harm low-wage workers. So that's not a good thing for Colorado.
Okay, and there we have the two proponents on each side. So, Patty, how would you respond to Tyler? What about some of the things he said? What would you counter?
Well, I think the best way to gauge what the impacts will be here in Colorado is to look at what's already happened in Colorado, which is in 2006, there was a similar proposal to raise the minimum wage, although that proposal was not phased in, and it was actually a much steeper increase. So from 2006 to 2007, there was a minimum wage increase of 30, basically a third. So the wage went up to $6.85 from, I think it was like $5.35, something like that. And in 2007 and 2008, there were job gains all across the state. So this doom and gloom, oh, the sky is falling, we're going to lose all these jobs, it just doesn't bear out. I mean, it was a much steeper increase than what we're proposing now, and there were job gains all across the state. So I kind of look at these numbers that Tyler's proposing and really wonder where they're coming from. And it kind of makes me, so we did a little research into this independent, and I'm using air quotes here for those of you on the radio, study. And so it was put out by this group. They're called the Public Policy Roundtable. Have you ever heard of the Public Policy Roundtable?
I have not.
Yeah, well, neither had I.
Actually,
and
that's
so,
not what they're called. It's the Common Sense Policy Roundtable.
Oh, sorry.
Roundtable.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, have you ever heard of the Common Sense Public, or the Common Sense what?
Common Sense Policy Roundtable.
I have not heard of them either. No.
And they work with CU Boulder Business School.
Well, so the executive director of the Common Sense Policy Roundtable is a woman named Kristen Strom. And Tyler, could you let me know who the campaign or the general consultant is for your campaign?
She didn't do the study. The study was done by Dr. Eric Fuchs at Portland State University. So it's not about who was involved in and people who commissioned the study. It's the study itself. So rather than trying to go after personalities who happen to be involved with it, let's look at the actual study. And Dr. Eric Fuchs is actually
I'm actually not finished talking yet.
Hold on one second, Tyler. Okay, so
Kristen Strom happens to be married to Josh Penry, who's the general consultant on the opposition campaign. The operation is essentially a bunch of Republican consultants, and it's true, the study was completed by an economist who also happens to moonlight as the Republican Party chair in Portland, Oregon. So this is a study that was essentially put together by operatives, and when you look at how they came to the conclusions that they came to, this 90,000 number is sort of like, it's essentially like taking, what they did is they took this one study that showed, so the vast majority of the research shows that there's negligible job loss in when you raise the minimum wage in a phased-in approach. They took this one study, like an outlier study. It's essentially like climate deniers. Like, you're looking at all the research that shows all the impacts of climate change, and then these like handful of crackpot scientists over here who are saying, oh, climate change doesn't exist. Like, you can pull out any study you want and then base your research on it. And what they came up with was this 90,000 number that is completely inconsistent with the body of research that's out there. So, I mean, they can say all they want about this, oh, we're going to lose all these jobs and all the income that's going to be lost from it. It's just factually not true.
Now, what about the phased in? Tyler mentioned that this particular amendment we're going to be voting on is not phased in. What difference does that, I mean, it'll be phased in slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make a difference?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, so there's an economist from Princeton. His name's Alan Krueger. He was on the Obama. He was like led up the economic department, like little board that Obama has for several years. And he has done really exhaustive research on minimum wage. And he basically said that, look, he was actually, and I mean, my colleagues on the left are going to really not be happy about me saying this, but he published an op-ed, I think it was in the New York Times last year, where he basically said that the $15 an hour minimum wage that many folks on the left are proposing and many states are already taking up, you know, if you tried to blink at that across the country, we don't know what the impacts of that might be. It's what he said. He didn't say, you know, he said it's uncharted territory, but he basically said that $12 an hour phased in, but, you know, from now until 2020 will have a positive impact on low-wage workers and no negligible job loss and negative impacts, period.
And what about the rural argument that this will hurt smaller businesses in smaller parts of Colorado?
Sure. I mean, I guess I would ask if, you know, a worker in Grand Junction or Alamosa or some of these other places, I mean, does Tyler think they can live on $300 a week? I don't think there's a single place in this state where that wage is sustainable. I actually really agree with the Oregon policy, and I think it's smart in terms of phasing in. But we think that $12 an hour is actually a very appropriate floor for the entire state of Colorado.
Okay, Patty, thank you. Tyler, go ahead. What did you think about?
So, in response to the name calling on the study, she likes to point out one study, but the academic evidence is very clear across schools across the country. Professors are very clear: when you raise the price of something, the demand for it goes down. Raise the price of labor, the demand for it goes down. She likes to say, "Oh, it's a Republican economist." Let's look at the Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan, and they found that if you raise the federal minimum wage, which is lower than Colorado, Colorado's $8.31, federally at $7.25, the nonpartisan economist, the Congressional Budget Office, found if you raise wages from 725 to 9, there's about 100,000 job losses nationally. But if you raise it to 1010, there's 500,000 job losses. So what they're finding there is if you go too far, you end up creating blowback. And so raising the wages in small amounts, yes, we would not disagree that there's going to be very little impact on jobs for small increases. It's the large increases that studies show have a significant amount of blowback. And this is studies across the country that have found this. And even Seattle, we're not talking about studies projecting what's going to happen. Look what happened in Seattle when they raised the minimum wage $1.50. In this last year, the low-wage workers in Seattle are 1% less employed than low-wage workers nearby. They have less hours than workers nearby. In fact, they're making $1.50 more per hour. So at 40 hours a week, the average worker should be seeing a $60 increase. Well, the University of Washington nonpartisan economist commissioned by the city of Seattle found that, in fact, under their best-case scenario, workers were only seeing $5.50 more in their wages. Why? Because they've lost hours. They're supposed to be seeing 60, but they've had their hours cut. Under best case scenario, they're seeing $5 more per week.
So 1% of
those. Under a worst case scenario, they've lost $5 per week under the minimum wage increase because their hours have been cut back so much. So this has either helped workers very little or actually hurt them, and it's harmed the small businesses. Now 200 restaurants in Seattle are getting rid of tipping entirely and going to a service charge. And why that's really bad for workers is when you tip a waiter at a restaurant, that's their property. They get to keep it. If a restaurant gets rid of tipping and goes to a service charge, that service charge is the property of the restaurant. They can use that for rent. They can use that to pay the cooks. They can use that to buy food. They don't have to give any of it to the waiter. So waiters in Seattle are making $35, $45, $55 an hour based on tips, are now making on average between $14 and $18. So you've seen a massive cut in important jobs that are important for students, important for working women because they have flexible hours. You don't have to work a 9-to-5. You can come in and work 4 to 8. You work an 11-3 shift. So you're really harming the restaurant industry. I wish a third of adults in America get their first job in the restaurant industry. So by harming the restaurant industry, you're harming people's ability to get their first job, the ability to work their way through school. So we say that the economic evidence is pretty clear that job losses are going to occur. If you raise the price of something in 44% over the next 3 years, starting in January 1st, 2017, to January 1st, in 2020, do you think small businesses in rural Colorado are going to see a 44% increase in their revenue? If they don't, where are they going to cover the cost? Small businesses like restaurants make a profit margin of 3 to 4%. So when you spend $15 in a restaurant, the average $15 meal at a restaurant in Colorado, guess how much the restaurant maker makes pre-tax profit? Because this is what we're counting taking out of to pay for this wage, is their profit, right? 60 cents. 60 cents on a $15 meal. Where are they supposed to cover a 44% increase? They can't. So we talked to a woman who owns a restaurant in South Denver. She has about 85 employees. She actually started as a waiter herself, worked her way up, and eventually bought the restaurant. She said she'd have to lay off 15 employees if this happens. She's going to have to get rid of a lot of bussers who now make about $16 to $20 an hour. Even though they're paid the minimum wage by the restaurant, based on tips, they make about $16 to $20 an hour. She's going to have to lay off a lot of bussers. Waiters who now watch four tables are going to have to watch six, and they're going to have to bust their own tables. Because she doesn't make a huge profit margin. She makes 3 to 4%, 60 cents on that $15 meal. So she does not have the money. This is not, we're not saying this is going to harm big businesses. This is going to harm small businesses that don't have the profit margins.
Okay, that is the debate about the raising the minimum wage. We would like to have callers come in and call and ask questions for Tyler and Patty. About this, our phone number is 303-442-4242, and we would like your comments and questions. So, Tyler, the study in Seattle, I did some study on that in preparation for this, and it said that it was slightly less than 1%, but that other than that, everything seemed to be fine. There was no...
For the person out of work, though, that's not fine.
Well, for the one... No, but... There was not a flight of jobs away from Seattle. There was not a gigantic raising of prices. In fact, prices didn't go up at all. And so I'm not sure about your statistics there.
Well,
go ahead.
And
Patty?
I wanted to add, because the study also showed that the businesses in Seattle added jobs. I mean, the economy in Seattle is booming right now, and the economists that did that study had a hard time. They really wanted to be able to separate out the positive impacts on wages and on profits of the minimum wage increase versus the overall economic boom. So first of all, I'd just like to point out that the economy is going to fall, or the sky's going to fall in and the economy is going to crash. Seattle just raised the wage at a much steeper level than what we're proposing. And there's the biggest economic boom there in years is happening in the region. And they also showed that that companies in Seattle are adding jobs at the same rate as businesses outside of the city. And it's true what Tyler said about there being some cutting of hours of workers in low-wage industries, but they still had a 7% income gain for the year. And personally, if you told me I could make 7% more money and work less hours, I'd be totally okay with that.
Tyler, how would you respond?
So what's interesting here is we're not saying the sky is going to fall. We're saying it's going to harm people like small businesses in rural communities. We're not going to all of a sudden see cranes leave Denver and all of a sudden there's going to be no more economic growth. But we're saying it's going to hurt the least among us, the small businesses, the rural communities, and those low-wage workers. And what's important is that that same study by the University of Washington said the reason we haven't seen massive negative increases is because the Seattle economy is booming because of the tech industry. There's not low-wage workers in the tech industry. But what you've seen among low-wage workers who this measure is intended to help, they are 1% less employed and they have less hours. They're not making 7% more. Remember what the economist said, under their best case scenario, they're making $5.50 more per week, even though they should be seeing 60. Why? Because their hours have been cut, jobs have been lost, a little bit less than 1% less employed. So you have people who've gone from low wage to no wage. You've gotten people who think they're going to make $60 more a week, now making $5 more a week under a best case scenario. But under another way of analyzing those numbers, economists found these workers have lost $5 per week. They've actually seen their wages overall take home pay go down. And she said there's not been a massive job loss. Well, 200 restaurants, as I mentioned, are no longer in taking tipping. That's taking the wages from what they were making, $35 to $55 an hour, down to $14 to $20. That's a massive cut in take-home pay for a lot of wages for low-wage workers in the restaurant industry. So well, there has been an impact.
Let me ask you a quick question about that. Aren't those restaurants, though, providing health care now? So isn't there a net gain? I know of some restaurants in Colorado that have done that. They've gone to like $15 or $16 an hour, but then the employees get health care. And so the net gain is actually increased.
That's not a mandate. That is something that it was the employers have chosen to do. So that's a business decision to keep on good employees. So that gives them a competitive advantage, and that's what businesses should be able to do. Decide what they need to do to keep on the employees they want to keep. When it's mandated across the board, we have bigger issues. And what we're talking about here is a minimum wage increase. If they decided to add health insurance, that's one thing they decided to do is they had the profit margin. It wasn't mandated to them.
Okay, we have a caller. We have Dana in Boulder has a question about tips and restaurant workers. Dana, go ahead. What's your question for Tyler or Patty?
Yeah, you know, I've done a lot of work in rural Colorado. A lot of it is fast food chains. Fast food chains do not allow their workers to be tipped. So explain that. I mean, those restaurants aren't going to change, and those workers are going to see no benefits. What do you have to say to that, Tyler?
Go ahead, Tyler.
So we're talking about small family independent restaurants. 75% of restaurants in Colorado are one single location restaurants. 75% are, and there's 270,000 employees in the restaurant industry in Colorado, and the overwhelming majority work for single location restaurants. So we're talking about the small Mexican restaurant on Alamosa on Main Street that's going to have a hard time with this. Look at La Cueva restaurant on East Colfax and Aurora. Not a wealthy area. An area that's seen good times, bad times, and even worse times. It's been a tough going on East Colfax. La Cueva Mexican restaurant out there, been there 42 years, says, look, I don't know how I'm going to afford this. We make a 3 to 7% profit margin depending on the year. It's going to cost him $72,000 over the next three years. He doesn't know where it's going to come from. He can't raise prices because customers in East Colfax won't necessarily be able to afford them. Yes, Larimer Square, Boulder, Cherry Hills Village, they can raise prices and their customers can afford it. They cannot afford it in rural Colorado. And so the simple idea that we'll just raise prices to cover the increase in cost may be passable on in wealthier areas, but in poor communities like areas of East Colfax and Aurora and rural communities, those price increases are not going to be affordable and you're going to see a loss of business.
I'd just like to address something that hasn't come up yet, which is the fact that this measure is going to put $7,000 per year in the pockets of 500,000 Coloradans. And these are the folks that are the economic engine of this state. So it's like this zero-sum game is missing this whole piece, which is more money in working families' pockets means they spend that money here in Colorado, and that grows the economy. It increases our GDP. It actually increases jobs, and it just helps our communities thrive in general. So, you know, are there going to be cost increases for restaurant owners? Yes. But when the folks that actually patronize those places, just like what Tyler's talking about on East Colfax and Aurora, are going to see an increase of customers because people that, you know, maybe couldn't afford to eat out before are going to have money in their pockets to be able to do just that.
Dana, do you have any other questions or comments?
Well, I just disagree with this point. Fast food industry, corporate industry, is a major employer, and you're talking about a large number of people.
Okay, Dana, thanks for your call.
On that point, actually, in Colorado, according to the Small Business Administration, 97.6% of all Colorado employers are small businesses. So I know we like to point the finger at corporate fat cats and say they're hurting the worker. What we're saying is we're not concerned about the corporate company, the big companies. We're concerned about the small businesses. We're concerned about the people who won't be able to pass this on. This money doesn't come from nowhere. So this idea that there's all of a sudden going to be this new money into this economy, well, it's coming from the small business owner who's employing people now. So if they employ less people, that's not going to be good for that local economy.
You are listening to KGNU Radio, Denver Boulder, 88.5 FM and 1390 AM, and at KGNU.org. We have another caller. Gene, what is your question or comment for our guest today?
Every time we talk about raising the minimum wages, the people that argue against it, they say a disaster will happen in the labor market. And over the years, over the decades, it didn't happen, number one. Number two, if businesses, they cannot build in the raise of the wages into the prices of the products they sell, maybe, and they cannot sell them that way, maybe those products are not good enough to stand the demand on the market. To sell cheaply products just for the sake of having a business in which we exploit people, those are not businesses worth having in our communities. So the idea that we need jobs at any cost, slave wage jobs at any cost, I don't think it's a value that we as communities, we should hold.
Tyler, what do you think about that?
I wholeheartedly reject the idea that we should just get rid of businesses that have small profit margins. I'm sorry, not all companies can afford to have 25% and 30%
profit margins. It's not about small margin. It's about building, being able to build in the product you sell, such as life. There is something called inflation. And not only that, Federal Reserve is even arguing many times that inflation is something that we should have. But when it comes to wages, we fight tooth and nail against that sort of an inflation. Inflation should go goes up, productivity goes up, wages should go up. If businesses cannot build those raises into the price of the product, maybe the business is not good enough.
Okay, yeah, Gene, let's let Tyler finish.
Two points in that. I agree. As inflation goes up, wages go up. That's actually the law in the books in Colorado right now. We're one of the very few states where the wage goes up every single year with inflation. In fact, Colorado's minimum wage has gone up 61% in the last 10 years. 61%. The wages have gone up. And in fact, if this measure fails, the wages will continue to go up by the Consumer Price Index every single year. So we already see rising wages in Colorado. We have one of the highest in the West. But let's talk about what these companies are that you think should just fail because they can't price their profit into 44% increases. We're talking about restaurants like La Cueva, where technically minimum wage or something close to is paid to the waiters, but waiters make closer to about $30 an hour at La Cueva because of tips. So these are not low-wage workers. They make about $30 an hour. Bussers make $16 to $20, and so they're technically paid the minimum wage, but that cost increase is going to be put on the restaurant owner. Or let's look at Hot Pots. It's a ceramic paint-your-own pottery studio in Littleton on Main Street. It's a family business. They've had it for 13 years, and in fact, some of the workers there who are 18 came to look Hot Pots when they were 5, 6, 7 years old for their camps on pottery. And what the owner there needs is when she goes to pick up her kids from school or has a sick child, she needs someone to mind the store. It's not a very large profit margin. You can't charge a lot of money for paint your own pottery. People will start stop having their birthday parties there. They'll stop coming in on weeknights and weekends to go. There's a certain if she could charge more, she would. As a business owner, wouldn't you want to make more profit? So wouldn't she charge the price that she can get from run the market right now, but she needs someone to be able to mind the store. She can't afford to pay a 44% increase, because it's not just the 44% on top of that. It's the payroll wages, the unemployment tax. So we're talking about 60% increase in her bottom line costs, and so it means she's going to have to close the store. If she has a sick kid that day, she may not be able to have someone open the store. She's going to have to shut it down, lose all that business. She has to go pick her kids up from school. Maybe she can't afford to hire someone, that teenager who's 17, 18 years old, to open the store. So she's going to actually have to lay off people. The same people she's employing now, she won't be able to afford under a 44% or actually closer to a 60% increase if you include unemployment taxes and employer side of costs.
Patty, you had some thoughts on this.
Yeah, just Tyler was talking about how much the wage has already gone up in Colorado to get to the point where we are today, and some percentage numbers that sound really high. And I just wanted to put it in real terms for people, because the wage in January 2007 was $6.85. Today, it's $8.31. That's a 21% increase over 10 years. And I think most people would say that $8.31 is not an extravagant wage. It's, as we talked about, it's less than $300 a week. If our wage is so high, so our neighboring state of Nebraska has a higher wage, so does Arkansas, North Dakota, Alaska. There's a whole handful of actually very conservative-leaning states who have raised their wages in recent years and are now higher than Colorado. I think the other point is, again, how much the cost of living here has gone up. And so when we're talking about restoring balance to an economy where low-wage workers have their wages just haven't kept up. For those of us, you know, in the middle class, for those, you know, at the top end of the spectrum, like, we've seen a recovery and we're doing pretty well. It's the folks at the bottom who haven't seen that recovery and are still struggling and are frankly still living the recession that many of us feel like we left behind. We're talking about so when you look at the rents in Denver, for example, have gone up 37% since 2007, whereas wages have only gone up 21%. The folks at the bottom are the ones that are renting. And can you just tell them how it would feel to have your wage have increased that much in 10 years and having your rental costs go up, you know, an extra 17%?
Sure, that's out of context. So the wage is tied to the consumer price index of Boulder, Denver, Greeley, which includes the cost of rent. But other things have gone down, cost of energy, groceries, and it takes into account all the cost of living. And so we already have a wage that's tied to the cost of living. It's in the Constitution. It says we have to raise the wage as the cost of living goes up in Colorado. And she says something about, Patty says something about people still living in the recession. A lot of rural areas are not seeing the cranes and the construction and the booming economy that Denver is seeing. A lot of rural areas are still stuck in the recession and haven't come out of it. So those small businesses are living on precarious margins on communities that are not doing that well. So if they have to raise prices, they're going to have to they're going to lose work and have to lay off workers. So we're saying that because you're trying to apply a Denver mentality to Alamosa, you're going to do a lot of damage in rural communities.
Gene, thanks for your call. We have a lot of calls. We're going to move on. Next, we have Deborah from Boulder. Deborah, what is your comment or question?
Well, I find it interesting that we can take our specific from statistics in college, I learned this, that you can take whatever specific view you want to look at and try to manipulate to help people not feel the difference and the change. But the truth is, wages have changed a lot. And like Dana said, it's true. They haven't changed for the large corporations. They're not going up. They're holding their ground because their accountants don't really care about life. They care about money. But what will happen is what always happens with democracy is that the big boys that have the money, you know, because $30,000 is barely enough to live on, they're gonna get pushed over on a vote. And it's only 99 cents next year. That's the only increase happening. So no matter how much flip-flop people say, the economy will push out small restaurants because people have been losing money in that industry for many years. I mean, that's going to change. Our economy can't protect that. And we can pinpoint that as an argument point. But the truth is, wages are changing. People are getting more money in many industries, but not the fast food, not the large corporations. And they are the ones with the muscles. They're the ones you're hearing that are in opposition to this. They have the money.
Tyler, go ahead.
That's a good point. Other states have actually made exemption for small businesses. So, Patty, I'm wondering why your group didn't go forward with the measure that says large corporations must pay this increase, but small businesses have an exemption and can pay a lower rate because they simply don't have the profit margins to afford the increase. Why didn't you make an exemption for small businesses?
Anything in a democracy, it's really hard to say I love free market. But by the way, let's protect this business. That's really hard to do, and in the long haul, you're going to lose. You can put prohibition for 10 years in the country of people like this, the wild, wild west attitude. It isn't going to last. You can say you can keep the wage down, but it isn't going to last. You can say in the South, I needed slavery. They had plenty of people to work. They had plenty of people to work. They didn't want to pay them. So they went across country, across oceans to get to people that they could get to work for cheaper or no wage at all. So this is always going to be the push and shove. But enough people are at low wages now, and democracy works. That's all I have to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Patty, you were going to say something, or you had some thoughts.
We chose to phase in this proposal over 4 years when, frankly, the folks in our community are very desperate. And, you know, we got a lot of pushback from some of the organizations that were, you know, part of the decision-making process around this proposal, because people felt like they, you know, the communities that are most desperate and working at low-wage jobs needed this raise more quickly than that. We felt that we wanted to take into account the needs of small businesses, and we feel that we did that very, very well, and that we don't want to create a two-tiered, workers in some of these smaller companies are making, you know, a lower wage than others. We just didn't think that was a fair approach. And, we feel like we actually found exactly the right balance.
Deborah, thanks for your call. We have another call. Next is William. William, what is your comment or question for our guests?
Hey, Tyler, how's it going? I have a question for you. Hey, so I was just curious, if there is a recession, can we slow down the increase to stop job losses?
So no, we can't. That's one of the very unfortunate parts about how this is written. So what's important about the position of Keep Colorado Working? We are not opposing a minimum wage increase. That's not our position. We are opposing this minimum wage increase. We're saying the way this one is written is very damaging because there is no off-ramp. If all of a sudden we run into a recession and people are straight up losing their jobs, losing their companies over this because they can't afford 12, but maybe they could operate under 10, there's literally no way to fix that. If you put it through the legislature as this should be done, because this is complicated economic policy, it should not be written in two sentences, the meat cleaver in the Constitution. This should be done thoughtfully with things like an off-ramp for recognizing the economic policy is very complicated. That would be a better way of doing things, the way New York and California have. Adding an off-ramp for a recession, making a small business exemption.
How about $15 then?
A small business exemption, because we're not New York and California. Denver does not have the economy of New York and California, and we're already seeing negative blowbacks. But looking at Baltimore, they made an exemption for people with less than 50 employees, and all sorts of government regulations treat small businesses versus big businesses much different. Small businesses operate a lot on sweat equity and the hard work of small families that put it together. Restaurants, they are families. It's the aunts and the uncles and the fathers and the mothers and the kids together working 7 days a week to make this operate. And a 3-4% profit margin in a recession, and they are losing customer base. People are not going out to eat in a recession. They're trying to save their money. They're going to have to close if we don't have an off-ramp. And so we're saying this minimum wage increase is not designed in a smart way to protect small businesses and protect rural communities.
So, Patty, two questions. Why are there no exceptions? And would it have been better, as Tyler says, to go through the legislature as opposed to a constitutional amendment?
Sure. Well, first of all, this is already ingrained in the Constitution, so there was no way for it. The only way to change it is through the Constitution. So we had no choice in that. In terms of the off-ramp, I think, again, the best way to determine what, is let's look at Colorado and our history. So this has been in the Constitution since 2006. In 2009 and 2010, we saw the Great Recession. We're talking about one of the biggest economic downturns in our lifetime. Just about as big as we can ever expect to see, currently in our current day. So what happened then? Because up in the last 10 years, there was, the minimum wage was tied to the consumer price index, so it could fluctuate up and down based on that. The wage did go down one time in that 10 years by 2 cents. It went down by 2 cents in the greatest economic recession that we've seen in our lifetime. So I feel like that's just not a very strong argument. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, William, go ahead. What I heard you. William, are you there? Go ahead. What further comments do you have? Did we lose William? We may have lost William. Sorry about that, William. Thanks for your comment and question. We have another call, and let me say we're discussing the minimum wage amendment. Please give us a call. We have 15 minutes left at 303-442-4242. Tyler?
It's actually not true you can't do the legislature. There was two bills this year to raise it to $12.50, and a number of legislators had very serious concerns about the impact on small businesses by raising it so much, thinking it would go too far. And so there was a bill, and it can be done to the legislature, where you can actually recognize the difference between there was two bills to raise it to $12.50.
Yeah, but they were going to refer it to the ballot. You can't pass it in the legislature.
You can work with the legislator because there's a current law that will allow you to have that doesn't allow you to have cities raise wages higher than the state. But the state legislator could actually craft a way where you could have different rates like Oregon does, one for rural communities, one for Metro Portland, one for Metro Denver, one for rural Colorado. Legislature can actually change that law. And so this is much better done through a process where you can have amendments, you can have debate, and you can have a smart economic policy that takes into account the unintended consequences. We're saying we support raising wages for workers. Absolutely. There are other ways to do it that don't have as many unintended consequences. You can do it by making exceptions for small businesses, for rural communities. You can have the earned income tax credit. There are many different ways to help low-wage workers, and we absolutely support more retraining costs, that we support raising wages for workers. We're saying this measure, with no off-ramp, with no exception for small business, with no acknowledgement that rural Colorado lives in a very different economic situation than Metro Denver, with none of that, that makes it bad for Colorado.
Patty, you had a thought?
I just want to point out to your listeners who we're hearing from here. Essentially a consultant who's paid by the restaurant industry to come and tell you that, oh, of course we support raising the wage. We just don't support this increase. I'm just not buying it. We're talking about one side who is working in the communities that are most desperate in this state and are trying to live on $300 a week. And then we're talking about an industry that's funded by large corporations like McDonald's, like Yum Foods, like that are worried about their profit margins going down. I'll let your listeners decide which side they want to stand on.
We have another caller. We have Corey and Aurora. Corey, what is your comment or question?
I just have a question, maybe for Tyler, doesn't matter who, but I think that he was talking about how things can be situational to where if the profit margins dictate a lower wage, then that should be taken into consideration. But I'm wondering if the people that are fighting for that are the same people that would maybe fight for the same profit margins that are doing well to dictate a higher minimum wage. So I don't hear them arguing for that at all.
Actually, it brings up a really good point, and I was accused of representing the restaurant industry. Keep Colorado Working represents a wide variety of rural chambers of commerce, small businesses, Main Street retailers. But the restaurant industry, the Colorado restaurant industry, sat down with the proponents of this measure, which is right now 90% funded from out-of-state national labor unions. They have the money. Our money's come from small restaurants right now, pizza shops, and restaurants on Main Street right now. But let's take a look at what happened back in March when this all began, when this was first written. The Colorado restaurant industry sat down, which is just one of the many partners of our coalition, sat down with the unions, SEIU, AFL-CIO, who are the ones spearheading this initiative at the beginning. And they said, can we come to a compromise? Can we work with the tip credit? So our tipped employees, who do make way above minimum wage, but we pay them minimum wage because most of it comes from tips, can we work out a tip credit solution, a compromise that will allow us to not have the same serious ramifications? Because we're okay with the wage going up, but we're concerned about how this is having an outsized impact in the restaurant industry. And can we look at a wage? Other people said, can we look at $10.50? Can we look at something that's not so extreme, not a 44% increase? We've already had small businesses raise their wage by 61% in the last 10 years. Their revenues haven't gone up 61% necessarily, but they want to take care of the workers, and so they've managed to make that work. But another 44%, that goes too far. Can we talk about a 25% increase? Can we talk about a compromise on the tip credit? And they were told no. They said no compromise. The AFL-CIO and SEIU told them not only will we not compromise, but we actually want $15 an hour, and we want to get rid of the tip credit entirely. And so that's not the Colorado way. Look at Governor Hickenlooper. He's really made a big focus on the need for compromise to get a state like a purple state like Colorado through through these, because we are a challenging state with many, many diverse economies. We need compromise to get things through in a state that's this politically divided. And they refuse to compromise. And that's part of the problem with this initiative. If they had compromised, they probably could have gotten something with no opposition. But instead, they push through an initiative that is one size fits all and simply goes too far. We're saying that wage can go up, and it should go up, and it will go up if this fails, because it's already in the Constitution to go up with the cost of living every single year. We simply think this initiative goes too far, and they were unwilling to negotiate, unwilling to compromise on that. And that's where we are today.
Patty?
Sure. So the Restaurant Association was particularly concerned about the tipped wage, because that obviously affects their bottom line in a big way. Right now, tipped workers in the state make by law $3 an hour less than regular minimum wage workers. And, you know, Tyler's thrown out some numbers from the Seattle study and others about, you know, these high-rolling servers and bartenders who are making $25 an hour, et cetera. So I did a little checking before this interview about, so the Colorado Department of Labor actually has very clear statistics on tipped workers and what they make in the state. The average the median tipped wage in the state of Colorado is a whopping $9.02 an hour. Are there tipped folks who in downtown Denver who make more money than that? Of course, but three quarters of them make less than $9.50 an hour. Are you trying to say that that's, you know, too much money? We're talking about 1 in 10 tipped workers in the state of Colorado makes as much as $15.87 an hour. These are not people who are, you know, rolling in money. We're talking about people who are barely making over the minimum wage themselves.
Tyler?
Oh, that's simply not true. A lot of those wages aren't declared. What we're saying is that the minimum wage increase, we try to find a compromise, because people who make a tipped wage, like bartenders, can pull home a lot more money, and so their restaurant survives on paying them that wage. So in the $15 example I gave for a restaurant, 60 cents is all the restaurant owner sees pre-tax. So that's not even his take-home profit, his or her take-home profit. That is pre-tax profit. Of that, about $5 goes to the food on the $15 meal. $5 goes to overhead, licensing fees, insurance, things like that. And $5 goes to labor to pay the cooks and pay the waiters their wage, not including their tips. So if you see an increase of 44% in that one-third portion, that's going to be a major cost increase to break the back of small business owners, because the average restaurant owner only makes 3 to 4% profit. So if you increase one of their largest line items by 44%, there is no more profit margin. The business can't survive. They have to either let go workers, reduce hours, or raise prices. And they can probably raise prices and survive in downtown Denver. But in rural Colorado, in Mexican restaurant, in Alamosa, they don't have the clientele that can necessarily afford that. Their working families are going to eat out less. Another area I want to bring up that hasn't been talked about is childcare. Childcare is one of the highest costs in the country for Colorado. For an average infant, it costs you $13,000 a year. For the average toddler, about a four-year-old, costs you $10,000 a year. A lot of working families, a ton of working families, their childcare costs are higher than the rent or their mortgage. This is going to see an increase. You could see an increase of 20 to 30% increase in childcare costs. So many working families that are working very hard, both parents in their home are working, trying to get by, barely can afford their rent and their childcare costs. This is going to see an increase in their childcare costs. You're going to be harming a lot of these hardworking families. I talked to a childcare provider in Ray and said, this is going to really hurt my working moms. They can't afford. We're going to have, because in childcare, it's the child to worker ratio. You can't really cut costs in that. And so if they have to pay the workers more, and you see a 44% increase, and a lot of them make more than minimum wage, but as the minimum wage goes up, their wage will have to be higher to get the same level and quality of worker, you're going to see those costs passed on to working families. And that's a very serious concern. These would be small business exemptions. Most child care providers are single, standalone small businesses. They don't have an exemption here. They're charged the same increase as big box stores in Denver, as big corporations. These small shops run out of a living room that help provide low cost and affordable child care for working families. If they have to take these wage increases and pass them on, they're going to pass them on to those working families. And you're going to see a lot of really hard working families unable to afford childcare, decide between keeping their job, paying their rent, or paying their childcare. And that's a situation we don't want to put working families in.
Okay, Patty, and then we have another caller.
Okay. I'm really glad Tyler's so concerned about the working families out there. It's interesting that he says that, because the Consumer Price Index, which he keeps referring to, which is, you know, why we don't need to raise the wage because it's going up anyway, actually doesn't take into account childcare costs. So that's a huge factor for working families, I agree, and something that's that the increases in that industry have not are not reflected in the CPI. That's one of the reasons why we think raising the wage through this measure is that much more necessary. The other thing that's not reflected in the consumer price index, which we think makes it a really poor indicator of what the cost of living actually is housing costs. And he's right that rent is included in housing costs, but so are mortgages. And so those of us who own our homes see almost, you know, see very, very small percentages in increased housing costs because of, you know, taxes and insurance and that sort of thing. And so that really across the state kind of washes out the increases in rent that we're seeing. So the consumer price index is not actually a very good indicator of the cost of living that most working families experience because they're all paying rent, which has gone up astronomically. It also doesn't include childcare costs.
We have a call, Michael in Longmont. Michael, what is your comment or question?
I would agree that that we have to change in order for us to be able to have an increase in minimum wage. We have to change cultural expectations of what people get paid and what various commodities cost. For example, food. We have accepted much higher increases in rent and. In my particular situation, I'm making $11.50 an hour, and I've owned a business for 25 years. The first 12 years of that business, I worked two jobs in order to make the business successful or in order to make it workable, and I made absolutely no income during those 12 years on that business. I have 15 employees, and four of them are making more money than I am, a higher wage than I am. I was against Bernie Sanders' idea of $15 an hour because I thought it would break my business. But I did sign the petition to raise the Colorado minimum wage to 12. And why would I do that? Because I think we have to raise the standard of living for ordinary people. And I think the only way to do that is to take a step and start to change people's expectations about what they are going to have to pay for things, and I probably will have to raise my prices in order to accommodate that. I don't know where the money is going to come from. My business operates on a very slight profit margin, but I think that this is an important and necessary step.
Michael, thank you for your call. We have 4 minutes left. We're going to go to the last caller, Laurel in Boulder. What is your comment or question?
Hi, yes, thank you. Tyler, you just gave away the secret, and I thank you. You are talking about people as a line item. In Boulder, we never look at people as a line item. These are valuable members of our community. And if a company is relying on a business model that requires them to pay workers less than it takes the worker to survive, that business model is invalid.
Okay, Laurel, thank you for that. Good thought.
To my earlier point in that, if businesses could raise prices right now and customers would pay it, why wouldn't they do that? Wouldn't that be in the business's best interest? And if they can't do it, then there's a reason for that. So if we force them to do it, what negative consequences are going to happen? That is the entire point of Keep Colorado Working. We are not opposing minimum wage increase. Minimum wage will go up next year in Colorado with inflation if this thing fails. We're saying this attempt goes too far, and it's the unintended consequences. It's harming the very same low-wage workers this is meant to help. And so if a small business operates in a small profit margins, and their customers aren't coming in more when their costs go up 44%, they're going to have to let go workers. And what workers are they going to let go? Those very same low-wage workers. So we're saying not only is this not going to improve the economy, it's going to harm the very same low-wage workers that this is intended to help. And going back to the studies, they're throwing out Republican, Democrat. Go back to the Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan. They found if we raised it $1.75, it'd be 100,000 job losses. But if we raised it $2.85, it'd be 500,000. So economic research, nonpartisan economic research, shows very clearly there's a point in which you go too far and you have blowback. You have unintended consequences where you raise You price working families out of being able to afford childcare. You price poor and rural communities out of being able to eat out as much. And then you price those businesses out of business. And if they could charge more for their services right now, they would. They can't because the market won't bear it. And just simply mandating it in the Constitution won't all of a sudden give them more profit. It means they're going to have to lay off workers and reduce hours of the very same low-wage workers this measure is intended to help.
Tyler, great concluding comment. Patty, we have 1 minute. Go ahead and finish it up.
I was really hoping to get back to the CBO study because so this 500,000 job loss is that they said it would be somewhere between 0 and 1 million. So they just decided they picked the middle point, 500,000. And they said, that's possibly what would happen. We're talking about 145 million jobs in the U.S. economy. That's 0.3% of the jobs. And if Tyler's so interested in that number, then maybe he should apply that to Colorado. So if that study were applied to Colorado, the job loss based on this measure would not be 90,000 jobs. It would be 8,000 jobs. So it's interesting that he thinks both of those numbers are valid. And I'd also like to point out that same study showed that an increase to the minimum wage of $12 an hour would pull 24 million workers out of poverty. If we're talking about 500,000 people who have to look for a new job, and when they find it, they will have a higher wage, and 24 million people pulled out of poverty, I'm willing to make that bet.
Great debate. Tyler Sandberg and Patty Kupfer, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It will be interesting to see how this develops and what the Colorado voters decide in the fall. I've been your host this morning, Jim Banks. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned next for a morning of wonderful, eclectic KGNU music.